From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, ancient civilizations. We've got quite a program for you tonight. Here's what's happening. One of the saddest stories ever. And truly, one can die of a broken heart. Debbie Reynolds, one of Hollywood's biggest stars in the 1950s and 60s, has died at the age of 84, one day after her daughter Carrie Fisher passed away. Reynolds was taken to a Los Angeles hospital Wednesday afternoon. Apparently she had a stroke, and then she died in the hospital several hours ago. Gosh, what a sad story. Reynolds, who was born Mary Frances Reynolds, 84 years old, was a singer, dancer, actress who starred in Singing in the Rain and The Unsinkable Molly Brown. In a moment, just a special tribute to Debbie Reynolds. Deaths from heart-related causes tend to spike around the holidays, and the cold weather may not really be to blame, according to a recent study. What do they say? Seasonal stress. Folks, take it easy during the holidays. Just chill out. President-elect Donald Trump is claiming another victory. Sprint will bring back 5,000 jobs to the United States. Sprint has confirmed the news in a statement saying that the telecom company would create or bring back to America 5,000 jobs, mostly in customer care and sales. Now, the announcement comes only a month after Mr. Trump helped Carrier to keep 800 jobs in Indiana. The government of Germany is considering imposing a fine that would allow fining social networks such as Facebook $522,000 each day that the platform leaves a fake news story up without deleting it. Lauren Weinstein, expert on the Internet. Boy, is that going to have any teeth, Lauren? How are they going to control that?
It's a really good question. It depends on how broad a net they try to cast. I mean, there's some stories where we can definitively state that they are false, and those are the easy ones. The difficult ones are going to be where it's not so clear cut and where there's more disagreement. One of the interesting points here that people have been asking me about this since Germany started talking along these lines.
It's crazy.
Whether something like that could happen here in the U.S., and while your first reaction is to say no because of First Amendment considerations, the government wouldn't be able to impose something like that here, in actuality, it could, because if, you know, there are some political factions that want to expand libel laws, for example, and that would be one way to do the same thing here. If you expanded libel laws, which Donald Trump, of course, has multiple times suggested doing, that could be used to go after news items on the basis that you felt that they were fake, that they involved you. It ties in with the right to be forgotten and issues like that. I'm a big opponent of the right to be forgotten that they have in Europe. And you can really get into a slippery slope where more and more imaginative legal means and litigation and court actions can be used to try shut down speech. So it might expand beyond Germany. It could end up happening here too.
I know. I just don't know how they're going to control something like that. Lauren, thank you so much. Have yourself a great new year if we don't talk to you before that. A series of modern earthquakes rocked the California-Nevada border, shaking residents in both states but producing no reports of major damage or injuries. As Cal Ori was just telling us a few days ago, you never know when the big one is about to hit. China is aiming to own the race for space in the next decade. China's ambitious and fast-growing space program is targeting a landing on the dark side of the moon by 2018 and reaching Mars before the end of the decade. Our science advisor and space historian, Robert Zimmerman. Robert, are they going to beat us to the punch or what?
They have been. Oh, I mean, right great. Now, worldwide, the Chinese have the most sophisticated manned program. It runs at a very slow pace, but nonetheless, they can launch astronauts into space. We can. They're building a space station. We have one, but we had to get others to help us build it. We couldn't do it ourselves. They have their own. And they have an aggressive what do you call a planetary program that you mentioned. What's interesting to me, this all comes from a white paper that their government released, their information office released this week. And the thing that's most interesting about that paper, it's very comprehensive. They really are looking at their whole space infrastructure to get it going. But they also want to have private enterprise. This is China, remember. They want private enterprise to be the fuel that will get this program going. Competition and private companies. And they've tried to actually set their regulatory market system to increase market access. Very interesting. They do that. They are definitely going to be a competitor to watch.
Well, you know, Robert, we raced the Soviets, and we beat them, so maybe we should do the same with the Chinese.
I actually have perfect faith that we're going to do that, by the way, because it's still a government program they have, and we're going to end up with, for the next decade, a plethora of independent private companies fighting for the right to get into space. And that competition, I think, is easily going to win that race. But nonetheless, they're going to be a competitor we have to watch out for.
Robert's website, BehindTheBlack.com. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it. A contractor is suing a Virginia couple for $90,000 for injuries he says were caused when their pet squirrel attacked them. Jeez. We got a story in the news at coasttocoastam.com. It is unbelievable. I think we're going to do a story on this in a full show, perhaps. But a satellite spots a massive object hidden under the frozen wasteland of Antarctica. Scientists believe that a massive object, which could change our understanding of history, is hidden beneath Antarctic ice. The huge and mysterious anomaly, it's there, folks, is thought to be lurking beneath the frozen wastes of an area called Wilkes Land. It stretches for a distance of 151 miles across and has a depth of about 848 meters. Some researchers believe it is the remains of a truly massive asteroid, which was more than twice the size of a space rock, which wiped out the dinosaurs. If this explanation is true, it could mean this killer asteroid caused the Permian-Triassic extinction event, which killed off 96% of Earth's sea creatures and up to 70% of the vertebrate organisms living on land. Now, wilder minds of the Internet have come up with their own theories, which some conspiracy theorists claim it could be a massive UFO base or a portal to a mysterious underworld called the Hollow Earth. Who knows, but it needs to be investigating. Anyways, Debbie Reynolds, dead at the age of 84, she was planning the funeral of her daughter, Carrie Fisher, who just died at the age of 60 of a heart attack. Debbie Reynolds apparently died of a stroke. Truly, a broken heart did this. I'm convinced of that. She was one of a kind. I mean, I remember as a kid, my parents were horrified when her then husband, Eddie Fisher, who was Carrie's father, broke up with Debbie and started seeing and had an affair and ended up marrying Elizabeth Taylor. Debbie Reynolds and Elizabeth Taylor were once friends. Years later, they became friends again. Debbie Reynolds, of course, starred in a 1957 hit called Tammy and the Bachelor, which in that movie, her song Tammy reached the number one on the music charts. And welcome back to Coast, George Dory with you. Scott Portzline with us. For 30 years, Scott has researched the issue of sabotage and terrorism of nuclear power plants. His research has been recognized by the U.S. Department of Energy, Homeland Security, various military branches as well. Scott has researched more than 40,000 pages of documents on the Three Mile Island core melt from the National Archives and other public document rooms as well. We're going to be talking about the possibility of terrorism and sabotage at our nuke plants. And Scott, thanks for joining us. What an unbelievable day with the passing of Debbie Reynolds. I just can't believe it.
Yeah, I see a lot of posts on Facebook indicating how touched people are by these two deaths.
Just very sad, very sad. Broken hearts, no doubt. Scott, how have you been? It's been a little bit since we talked, about a month ago.
I've been doing good, thank you. And I noticed that this makes 20 years since my first appearance on Coast to Coast.
Wow.
Back then with Art Bell, and we talked a little bit about the evidence that Three Mile Island was actually started by a saboteur and not an accident. And if that sounds far out, well, we can go over that some other day, but if that sounds far out, look up the Union Carbide accident at Bhopal, India, where the insecticides were released and killed thousands of people. The company Union Carbide said that it was triggered by a saboteur who introduced a hose with water into the chemicals, and that caused the dispersal that killed everybody.
Unbelievable. How many operating nuclear power plants, Scott, do we have right now?
In the United States, there's 99 that are operating right now, down from 104 in recent years. Around the world, there's about 440 commercial power reactors. And then we have maybe 100 research reactors or medical facilities around the world that also need protection. But there's also dangerous nuclear material stored at industries or within universities. And there for a while, actually many years, I should say, and I guess it was about a decade or so when people became computer savvy, you could go into the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's portal and discover exactly where these materials were located in a university, not only the name of the building, what floor to go to, what room to go to, what cabinet to go to, what shelf to go to, and also read about whether or not they had security or cameras and that sort of thing. So a saboteur or someone wanting to make a dirty bomb could do his homework from his computer and never tip off anyone at the university that he was about to plan a theft.
Jeez. Now, are we building any more new plants?
We threaten to.
Yeah.
And what's happened is down in the southeastern part of the United States, they wanted to build about 8 nuclear reactors and had plans for that. But the some of them started the licensing process and shaping the landscape, literally, and they found out that they're not going to be affordable. So the people who were already being charged in their rates, in their monthly bills, to pay for a reactor that hadn't even been built yet, became outraged, and now the government is backing off from the push of these new reactors, and the companies are backing off. In fact, many companies are really scrambling, and it's a worrisome time because we have an aging fleet of reactors, and we have utilities that don't want to spend a whole lot of money, and they're reducing their workforces. Some of these workers are pushed to the point where they're having nervous breakdowns, and I've talked to some of them right here at Three Mile Island, where the man's wife told me that the devil told him to kill his wife. And I actually got to meet the man, and we had a constable with us when we talked, and he was still saying the same thing. So unfortunately, the pressures get to some of these people, but I, of course, couldn't solely blame the pressure from the nuclear company, but the mental illness does occur. Well, that happens within the facility.
Sure. Now, at the outset, Scott, let me ask you, we are not revealing any information tonight that a would-be saboteur or terrorist doesn't already know, correct?
Yeah, that's true, and I'm so glad you're bringing up that point because I struggle with it constantly. And if you look at my track record with the news stories that I've generated on every network, you name them, and some of them around the world, I only reveal enough to show you that there is a problem that exists, but not all the information one would need. And I try to remain as mundane and non-alarmist as possible, because the last thing you want to do is get everybody focused on this. I want to get the government focused on it. I go behind closed doors with the government to get them focused on it. In return, I was threatened to be put in prison for 20 years under the Patriot Act if I talk too much.
A couple weeks ago, the UN Deputy Secretary General Jan Eliasson said that there are going to be threats, there are threats against nuke power plants. What would cause him, though, to bring this urgent warning to the UN Security Council? Something's going on, Scott.
Yeah, in the last year, there's been a few developments, and in the last 2 years, It included drones being flown over nuclear plants in France. So he actually also warned that he says that the ISIS is trying to get drones to spray nuclear materials over Western cities. So we're going to have a new phrase coined, dirty drones. He said they're looking to get crop duster type drones that could disperse radioactive materials and kill thousands of people. Now, I don't agree with him that they would kill thousands of people, but it could cause thousands of cancers that could end up killing people years later. Mm-hmm. But the terror from that would be absolutely tremendous. Some of these drones that we're flying are so small that they don't show up on radar. So it's conceivable that an attack could go on for an hour or so at different places, different cities at the same time, and no one would ever realize it for the first few hours.
And when you say these are small drones, are we talking about toy size or a little bigger than that?
Well, to disperse the radioactive materials, they would need a medium-sized drone. And, I've gone to the local model airplane fields to watch my friends fly.
Yeah.
And there's some drones. Well, you could call that a drone. They're controlled by the radio that the operator's holding. And they have 10-foot wingspans. They can lift 60 pounds, which is enough for an explosive. Well, another thing that they're worried about is that the Western leaders are worried about is that a medium-sized drone could carry an explosive into a spent fuel pool and take out the wall, and then the water drains out, and there's no way to refill if you've destroyed the wall, the containment of that wall, and then you're going to have the overheating of the fuel, the fires, and then the dispersal. So, I mean, this stuff is so real and so possible that it's actually making me nervous to talk to you about it. I'd rather not have to tell you what's being reported right now. This isn't coming just from me. It's in the news.
Stay with us, Scott. We're going to get into that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.
Coast Insiders, the new version of the Coast to Coast AM app is now available for iPhone and now Android 4.0 and above. Listen live or on demand anywhere, anytime. Go to coasttocoastam.com and download it today.
And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Scott Portzline with us, of course. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Scott, so what are the things that we don't know as Americans, as Canadians, that the saboteurs and the terrorists do know? What should we know?
Well, cybersecurity is one of the great concerns right now. In fact, 10 days ago, the UN Deputy Secretary said that he feared the nightmare scenario, as he called it, of a cyber attack on a nuclear power plant causing uncontrolled release of radiation. And he said that threat is growing. He said that vicious groups are seeking weapons of mass destruction, and they've already created mass disruption with cyber attacks. Also, earlier this year in October, the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency revealed that a nuclear power plant had been targeted with a disruptive cyber attack that occurred 2 or 3 years ago. And they didn't name the plant, but from the research, I believe that it's a nuclear plant in Germany that this happened to. So Cameron, the British Prime Minister, said that the dangers of ISIS getting control of nuclear materials is only too real. And the U.S. officials at this nuclear summit in Washington, D.C., said that they are afraid that extremists could steal radioactive material from nuclear medical facilities, or universities, like I was talking about earlier. And so they've been doing their homework, and they've been researching how to defeat certain systems at nuclear plants. But even with a cyber attack, if you overflow the network within the nuclear plant, you can cause a disruption. And in fact, that has happened accidentally at a couple of plants in the United States where they've had to shut down a reactor until they could regain control of their internal networks.
Fascinating. During World War II, Scott, you needed huge armies, tanks, a mighty might of a military. Now, in spite of the fact that we still have the best military in the world, it seems like all you need is some high-tech people to go ahead and screw up everything.
Yeah, it's really that simple, and it's a never-ending battle and very expensive to try to have businesses and utilities and governments protect themselves. Here in Pennsylvania, last month we had our district attorney's office in the Pittsburgh area fall victim to cyber ransom, where they lock up your system, and unless you pay the money, you won't get the code to unscramble your data. And jeez, it's very easy to fall prey to that. That also happened on a local level, and it's happening everywhere. So I attended a cybersecurity seminar here in Pennsylvania a month ago. This was put on by the Department of Homeland Security on the federal level and on the local level. The FBI was there, and they were saying they were pleased to see that the first time in 10 years for these types of seminars, their room was filled. There was about 200 small business owners there learning what they needed to know to protect their information, which really boils down to your credit card numbers and medical records and so forth. So I was incredibly disappointed, though. The information was about 10 years old. Now, that wasn't necessarily the fault of the people putting on the program, but the fact that the level of the people attending the program was 10 years behind. So they're discussing things like changing your passwords on a regular basis. But get this, no mention was ever made that there's programs, free software that you can put on your computer to manage your passwords so that you can drag and drop your password onto a web page where you need to use that to get in, or maybe it's your bank or whatever, and those are secured and encrypted on your own computer so that nobody can steal them easily. Because let's face it, if two computers can communicate to each other, there's a way in. And with the incredible computing power we have now, many passwords can be cracked with 2 or 3 days of running a program, a software program, to try to crack.
Right.
So this can happen at any industry that isn't protected well. And I was just flabbergasted the lack of practical solutions. They described some of the problems, but they didn't talk about solutions. Like now there's free ransomware prevention software that you can put on your computer, and it's coming from Malwarebytes. I encourage everybody to do that, because there's another term we all have got to get into our heads. It's called cyber hygiene. And cyber hygiene is the same thing as bad hygiene in grade school. If you take the bed bugs and the head lice into school with you, now half the school has it. Well, this time we're talking about national security. Cyber hygiene, start tonight.
Everybody should.
Yes, absolutely.
When Al-Qaeda did its 9/11, they also threatened to crash a jet into Three Mile Island. Are those threats still real?
That threat was deemed credible at the time because it came from a cell in Al-Qaeda, and it was very doable. In fact, we had to have the fighter jets scrambled overhead, so people in Harrisburg were calling me saying, are you aware that
the fighter jets
orbiting the Three Mile Island nuclear plant? So that was a nervous time. That happened on October the 17th, maybe it was the 18th, but it doesn't much matter now, right after 9/11, like you said. The threats that are coming in right now don't involve the aircrafts that I'm hearing about, but that, of course, is still a major threat, and now it may be transferring over to drones. So I worry a great deal about what could happen here at Three Mile Island, a world-famous plant, a potential target. The World Trade Center bombers in 1993 had a training camp 30 miles from Three Mile Island, and then wrote a letter to New York Times saying since they failed at bringing down the towers in their bombing 1993, that they were going to complete the job, which they did. And these were men associated at that time with Ramzi Youssef, and that all became Al-Qaeda. They became known as Al-Qaeda. And they also said they were going to attack nuclear facilities with 150 suicide soldiers. So they made this threat to crash a cargo jet laden with explosives into Three Mile Island, and they said at the same time an insider was going to disable the refrigerant system. And I'm sure they meant the cooling system, but got lost in the translation.
What do we do, Scott, if a group of terrorists raid a nuke plant and take it over?
Well, that's already happened when plants were under construction, and it's certainly a possibility. If people knew how easy it is to use trained paramilitary-type attackers, if they knew how easy it was to overcome some of these sophisticated high-tech systems at nuclear plants, their jaw would hit the floor because, and I'm not going to say it, but I did tell a couple of reporters, and that was basically the response. Fortunately, the threat that the nuclear plants are required to protect against, the size of that attack force became more realistic. There's still one big problem. They aren't requiring plants to defend against two attack groups, meaning coming in from different portions of the plant, for the plant perimeter, so that the terrorists could gain the upper hand by using that technique. But I think I was fairly convinced that the security officers had an even chance of defeating commando-type attackers at nuclear plants because of the upgrade to the rule.
What's your biggest threat? A attack on a nuke power plant, whether it is via cyber or physical, or a drone, you know, spraying material over cities?
I think it's aircraft. I think a full-size aircraft. It wouldn't necessarily have to be a passenger jet. I have a recording of a former Nuclear Regulatory Commission chairman. He was chairman at the time that this was recorded. I have a video where he's saying that you could probably cause enough damage, meaning fires, with a small aircraft, a Piper Cub, and you wouldn't even have to put explosives on it, is what he said. Now, that's not a direct line. You don't go from crashing a small aircraft into a building and a meltdown certain to happen, but it's that the fires that could result that could take out the necessary equipment and deny electricity to the plant, as happened at Fukushima.
What about the danger, Scott, of insiders doing something?
That's the one that the regulatory body worries about the most, because it's thought to be unstoppable. And there's been 150 acts of sabotage by insiders.
150?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, this goes back to the 70s, but most of that sabotage wasn't designed to release radiation. It was designed to get even with the utilities, so you have disgruntled workers. In fact, they wondered who would sabotage a plant. When that first came up in the 70s, they did some studies on it reluctantly, because anytime they were spending money on security, they saw that as a waste of money. You know, nobody needs this. And so they came up with the list. The number one was religious or political zealots. And, of course, that is what we're facing today. Number two is environmental extremists. So some people think in France those drones flying over the nuclear plants are actually coming from Greenpeace or somebody like that. But Greenpeace has denied it, and the government is backing off from pointing the finger at Greenpeace. And then the third would be the disgruntled employees. Well, it turns out that that is the number one person who commits sabotage at nuclear plants. Fourth would be a mentally ill employee, mm-hmm. And fifth would be organized crime with extortion or something like that. And so I talked to one of the men who brought this subject up in the beginning, and he said that it's very easy to sabotage a plant. In fact, you could train a janitor to do it, he told me, and there are things he can do to make it irreversible. And he and I talked about different things an insider could do, and one that he liked to talk about is a saboteur could use something like a popsicle stick to disable equipment and cause a meltdown.
Just by sticking it in the equipment?
Yeah. By placing it in relays, so that when the electrical relay signal is sent, there's no connection.
No connection. Now, so what is a saboteur, an insider? What's their mission? What's their goal? What do they want? Money?
In the United States so far, it's been just to get even with the management.
They're just ticked off for some reason.
Yeah, I can give you a few examples of that if you'd like to.
Okay, sure.
Well, the one that's the most remarkable to me was actually their motive was to protest lax nuclear safety. And this happened a month after two months after Three Mile Island. It happened at Surrey, Virginia, at the nuclear plant, where someone poured sodium hydroxide, which is basically Drano, onto new uranium fuel assemblies. And guess who it was? The reactor operators, two of them.
Two of them.
Well, it just blows my mind that they're protesting safety and destroying fuel. I mean, they did $1 million in damage. They were only sentenced to prison for 1 year. And out in California, just a couple of years ago at San Onofre, somebody sabotaged diesel generators by pouring engine coolant into the oil on purpose, and the FBI could never figure out who did that. And in Florida, at St. Lucie, somebody glued shut the locks on the backup control panel. You know how sometimes on control panels you have to put a key, insert a key to turn the switch? Somebody glued all those shut.
Now, of the 99 power plants online in the country right now, what percent of total power do they provide?
In the United States, we get about 19% of our electrical power from the plants.
So it hardly seems worth it.
When you add in the price of babysitting and protecting used nuclear fuel from now until forever...
That's true.
I don't care if they're giving us electricity for free. The price of guarding it and maintaining these waste dumps that catch on fire and blow up is way too high. It's not an economical feasible. And so I don't believe we should shut them all down today, although there's a new reason in the news that just came out today that says that we should be.
What's the reason?
Well, Greenpeace in France came out with a report saying that 19 reactors in the United States, including Three Mile Island and the Surrey plant in Virginia, Turkey Point in St. Lucie in Florida, Callaway in Missouri, Millstone in Connecticut, Prairie Island in Minnesota, they have defective reactor components, important components, that were made by the company Areva in France.
Like a recall on parts.
Exactly. Oh, boy, I didn't think of it that way. You're right. And it's the reactor vessel itself that's faulty. The head of the reactor, which is the cap that they have to bolt down, and you know, tremendous amount of force there, the steam generators, and the pressurizer. If any of those fail, you have a loss of coolant accident, a large break loss of coolant accident. And so they Beyond Nuclear Group, where you've had Paul Gunter and Kevin Camps on the program, they're calling for an immediate shutdown of all these reactors until they figure out the severity of the trouble.
They probably are right.
I hesitate like that because, yeah, you're right, and it's going to take 3 years to prove it, and the NRC is going to dismiss it anyhow.
Tell me about this federal court case that happened about 2 weeks ago. There was some 52-year-old mechanic.
Oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable. He was building a death ray, and he intended to use it to kill people, and he was intending to target Muslims. So what happened, how he was found out, he went to some Jewish organizations to try to get funding because he believed that they would be wanting to attack Muslims also.
Geez.
That was what the U.S. attorney said was his thought.
That's how he got caught.
Yes, exactly. So they turned him over, you know, the Jewish organizations that he approached, turned him over to the FBI, and they started a sting operation. So 10 days ago, he was sentenced to 30 years in federal prison.
Wow.
For plotting to build an industrial X-ray machine that would shoot out a directed beam of lethal radiation, and it would be power enough to kill people from a distance. And he planned to put it in a truck using batteries and park it outside Muslim institutions, and then activate it remotely.
Would he have been able to do this? Did he have that kind of technology?
Absolutely. And you would get that technology by stealing or acquiring X-ray tubes or radioactive sources, which I don't want to name here, but yes, it's doable. And he bragged about it in some of these meetings with the Sting people, that he was making something called Hiroshima on a light switch.
Well, you know what they're going to probably do, Scott, is let him off early for his plans.
I can't agree with that.
I hope not.
Well, he's even supposed to have lifetime monitoring when he's released 30 years from now. He's 52, so at the age 80.
Well, he'll probably be dead by then.
Oh, well, yeah, I hope so.
Okay, now look, if this 52-year-old industrial mechanic can develop this, don't you think we already have something like this?
Oh, sure. There was a radioactive Boy Scout store. I don't know if you ever heard of that. He made his own breeder reactor. He made his own particle beam to enrich isotopes that he could, so that he could make a breeder reactor.
A Boy Scout?
Yeah, he was 17 years old when he did this. It was in Michigan. His name was David Charles Hahn. He died just 3 months ago. He died in September this year.
How old was he?
39.
What did he die of? Cancer?
Well, they didn't say, but almost everybody believes it was exposure to radiation.
Yeah, it could have been. It just took that long.
Yep. And he did this while he was working on the Atomic Energy Merit Badge in 1995. He had a fascination with chemistry and then radioactive materials. So he would collect radium from the clocks that were manufactured in the 40s and 50s that had radium on the number so that you could see them at night, and he would scrape that off of there, and one day he got lucky. He used to drive around with a Geiger counter in his on his dashboard, and it pegged, and he went into a clock shop or an antique shop and found a bottle of the radioactive paint in the back of a clock, so he had hit the jackpot. And then he was using aliases and false credentials to obtain other materials, radioactive materials, and talking to people at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and he tricked them. Well, the same thing goes on today. There's more to that story if you want to.
All right, hold on, Scott. We're coming up to the top. We'll talk more. We'll take phone calls, too, on Coast to Coast AM.